We are back on the Andy Finn Show on Monday, the 27th of January, 2008. The president has finished his final State of the Union address, and I can't tell you how glad I am it's over. Didn't hear the whole thing, but I did hear part of it. And I got to tell you, it wasn't pretty. No, it was pretty. It was pretty boring. They usually are. I'm not picking on him in particular. Because we're worrying about who's going to be the next president. And boy, is it getting interesting and confusing. So let us go to the world of politics and see what happened in the last week. So, I suppose, let's start on the Democratic side. The biggest news over the weekend was that Barack Obama won the South Carolina primary on Saturday. And you'd have to call it a landslide. Obama ended up with, what did he end up with, 55% of the vote? You know, I don't even remember the exact number. Yeah, he was at 55. Hillary was at 27%. So he doubled her score, a little more than doubled it. Edwards at 18%. And he ended up carrying 80%, 78% of the black vote and 24% of the white vote. Now, what's interesting is what's happened to the campaign. This has given a big shot to Obama's campaign, of course, and people are saying, oh, Hillary may be in trouble. Well, we've got Florida tomorrow, and then we got Super Tuesday 1 week from tomorrow with when 24 states are choosing. And then finally, a week later, Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. get to choose. But it may not be decided by then, so that may actually be important. But what's interesting is what's happened to the race in the last week and what's happened to the Hillary campaign. Because basically, the general consensus about this, and I'm mixed about this, but the general consensus is that the Clintons got down and dirty and played in the mud and tried to drag Obama into the mud. And frankly, more specifically, they were attempting and succeeded in making him a black candidate. He's been running as somebody who's above race. He's not talking, he does not talk about his race. He wants to be inclusive. He wants to be lead all Americans, etc. And by raising issues about Martin Luther King versus what LBJ accomplished with the Civil Rights Act, by talking about a variety of things, Bill Clinton in particular, but Bill and Hillary have made Obama into the black candidate. So it, 3 months ago when the polls were taken in South Carolina, Hillary was leading among blacks. Obama was doing very well among whites, upper middle class whites, educated whites, a few other demographics. But he wasn't even carrying half of the blacks in the state. And people thought he would gain over time, as he did in Illinois, as he ran for his local race and then his Senate race. But the bottom line is that the way the Clintons played it, they brought race to the fore. And so he became the black candidate, and she and John Edwards were white candidates. Now, that is considered divisive politics and will hurt the Democratic Party long term, et cetera, is what everybody says. But it's Hillary and Bill's attempt to marginalize him. Now, I'm not going to go into all of this, but I will say this, that I think at some level the Clintons get a bad rap because some of the statements they've made were more innocent than that. When Hillary said, you know, that Obama was comparing himself to the Civil Rights Movement, including Martin Luther King, and Hillary said, well, you know, you need a president to can get things done. She was arguing competence, I think, and said, you know, Martin Luther King had the vision. He did the marching. He energized the people and organized them, but it took a president. It took LBJ to get it through Congress. What she should have pointed out is that he knew how to work Congress. Instead, everybody took it to mean that she was trying to minimize Martin Luther King's accomplishments, and so she had to backtrack and apologize and all that. I don't think that was intentionally racist. I think she was arguing against this notion of momentum that, you know, you can just go on the vision thing and become a great president. Because basically, Obama is, you know, in politics, our candidates are like, what do I want to say, freaks of nature or forces of nature. You can't necessarily stop them. You know, Bill Clinton got started, Jimmy Carter got started, Reagan got started. People couldn't stop them if they wanted to. It's just the way it works out. So Obama may be unstoppable, and I think the Clintons were seeing that, and they said, wait a minute, this is crazy. Hillary's got a lot more experience than him. Well, on some level she does, and some level she doesn't. But anyway, the whole thing about this is that some of it was kind of silly. For example, it is true that one of Clinton's surrogates came out and mentioned that the Republicans might use Barack Obama's admitted drug use against him. You know, the fact he admits he used cocaine, and you know, they might even claim he was a dealer. Somebody made some comment like that in New Hampshire. Hillary got rid of him, and then he was on Hardball and other shows. And on Hardball, Chris Matthews said, well, what about this? You guys use playing the drug card here? And the conversation was about drugs. And then Mark Penn, Hillary's main strategy guy, said, we do not want to make anything of his alleged or his previous drug use, his use of cocaine. He mentions the cocaine word, and Matthews is all over it. We just said cocaine. And then over the next few weeks, Matthews says cocaine, cocaine, cocaine. Well, who's pushing the story here, the media or Hillary's campaign? Now, that was an offense on the part of Hillary's campaign, but it's not like the reporters are all in agreement to not use these explosive words, right? They're using them. But I do fault Hillary and Bill for that one. Somebody else used the phrase, you can't just shuck and jive your way to the presidency or something. I think that was a slam against Obama. But when Bob Kerry announced he was supporting Hillary, he was supporting Hillary out in Iowa. Bob Kerry is a former senator from Nebraska, spelled differently than John Kerry. It's K-E-R-R-E-Y. And he's currently the president of the New School in New York City, a media school that's been around since the 70s. And it's a college. And he announced for Hillary, but when asked about it, why are you choosing Hillary over Obama or Edwards? He said, well, look, we got fine people in this race. He said, you know, in fact, Barack Obama is an amazing candidate. If he were president, can you imagine what the message is that sends the world, that a black man can be president in the United States, and that a man whose middle name is Hussein, at a time we're having trouble with with the whole world of 1.4 billion Muslims, can you imagine what a message that would send? Well, people like Chris Matthews and others jumped on him and said, well, he's mentioning his middle name, Hussein, and he's trying to tar him with the Muslim card or something. That's ridiculous. Okay, and people didn't let that go. They kept claiming that nothing happens by accident in the Clinton campaign. You know, this was orchestrated. Bob Kerry wouldn't have done it on his own. Yes, he would have. Bob Kerry, by all reports, is one of the most decent politicians we've ever had, Republican or Democrat. And he was being sincere. And frankly, I have to say, if Obama gets in, one of the advantages to the U.S. is that it sends a message to the world. Now, this is a problem between the red state and the blue state of mind. If you're in a blue state of mind, you probably traveled outside the country in the last couple of years. And for a lot of people in a red state of mind, they probably traveled outside the county in the last year. Right? America, rural America, tends to be red state. People that don't take vacations in Europe or in Asia or wherever tend to be red staters. They tend to be unilateralists like Bush. They tend to think multilateralism is for wimps. They tend to think negotiating and talking to your allies and working in concert is for people who aren't strong enough to do it otherwise. Whereas a blue state of mind, the attitude is, look, we've got a lot of different cultures here and a lot of different perspectives, and for us to come in singing an American tune, as Paul Simon once said in the mid-70s, is a mistake. That we're past the time we can dominate the world and get our way on everything. And that we'll get our way more often if we work with allies, if we work to contain adversaries through a coalition, and if we negotiate for what we want. So it really comes down to a red state, blue state thing here. But Bob Kerry was saying essentially that Osama would be an amazing representative for the U.S., a black man whose mother was white, whose father was black, and whose father was Muslim. Now, this crap that has come up already and that will probably come up again later in the campaign, unless it's John McCain, because McCain's probably too decent to do it, but certainly the 527 groups will do it if Obama gets the nomination. The claims that he, because he spent 4 years in, I don't know how many years, I think 4 years of school in Indonesia, that he was in a madrasa. He was not in a madrasa. He was in a regular school. And the notion that he's Muslim. He's not Muslim. But his middle name is Hussein. But I got to tell you, somebody who has a blue state of mind and believes that the most effective way to get what we want in the world is to work with others. I mean, that is the principle of interdependence. Let me pause here a minute and talk about interdependence. You know, we value independence in this country as a primary virtue, right? We have certain ideologies in this country, freedom and the capitalist system. But one of our ideologies is independence. And we argue that independence is everything. You know, Americans value independence more than other people is what we claim. And that we are the freest people in the world. Right? Of course, we had a frontier until, you know, only 100 years ago, where Europe didn't. But the world is built on interdependence. Independence is a myth. We have this notion in this country that you're either independent or dependent. And if you're not independent, that is, you're not a rugged individualist doing your own thing, you are dependent on somebody else. Just look at our media. Look at our television. Look at the cop shows. You know, we have all these movies and cop shows where the more realistic ones in recent years, if some criminals get in the way, they call for backup. They call for help. But the Dirty Harry kind of cop and all these other guys, they go into the abandoned factory by themselves chasing four bad guys. Don't bother with backup. They're in a chase. They don't bother calling it in. That's the rugged individualist, this idea that one guy, and it's usually a guy, can handle it all, right? The rugged individualist. That is a myth. That is movies and television. In fact, the life is based in interdependence. And you realize that as soon as you look around. You know, you're born into a family in which, see, you could say, well, I'm dependent when I'm a child, and then I'm independent when I'm a teenager. Gosh, I hope not. I hope you don't think that. Families are interdependent on one another. Husband and wife are interdependent on one another. It's not a sign of weakness. You gain more through strength. That's why we have organizations. Organizations are formed so you can do things individuals can't. And we all belong to dozens of organizations, either by formal membership or implicit membership. We're a member of our local, state, and federal government, whether we like it or not. We're a member of the school we're in. We're a member of the place where we work. We're a member of the church. We're a member of the neighborhood. We're a member of the town. We're a member of, the internet sites that we subscribe to, or place we get our email. Whatever it is, we have things in common, either loosely or closely, with other people. Interdependence is how the world works. And this idea that it's a sign of weakness for the United States to show that it's interdependent with its allies by consulting its allies. I still remember when in 2004 when John Kerry said, you know, we really shouldn't do this unilaterally, meaning most of our allies were against going into Iraq, and Bush finally had to say to Americans, look, this guy is a threat to our homeland, and he might have nukes, and he might give them to somebody, and they might be able to explode one over an American city. I can't take a chance, and I can't wait for the Europeans and everybody else to see it the right way. Kerry came along and said, that's ridiculous. You know, if our European allies don't think it's worth invading, and even Britain didn't, Tony Blair wanted to talk Bush out of it but couldn't, so he agreed to go along. And if the Arab countries around Saddam Hussein and all the Muslims in the region, none of them wanted the U.S. to invade. But we didn't listen. We knew better. And we were the ones at risk. The argument was our homeland was threatened by Saddam Hussein. That was the basis on which we went in. Kerry said, that's silly. You have to work with your allies and talk to your allies. And if you could stop and see it rationally, we wouldn't have gone in. But Bush and Cheney turned around and said, I'm not going to allow France to have veto power over America's homeland security. Well, we elected him because we were too fearful. We were still too close to 9/11, and the country has too much fear. But in 2006, we moved a ways away from the fear. And in 2008, I'm hoping we'll take another step back from that high level of fear Americans often have when confronted with an enemy and see that interdependence is the way you go. And that's why I got to vote for someone who's in a blue state of mind. And that's either Barack or Hillary on the Democratic side, it looks like, because I don't think Edwards has a chance. But the only person in the Republican race who's in a blue state of mind, and therefore the only Republican who could possibly get my vote, is John McCain. Today's the 27th of January, 2008. A week ago, we were off because it was Martin Luther King Day, but a week ago, the 20th, was the one-year anniversary of the last day of the Bush presidency and the first day of the next presidency. And, you know, at this point, I don't really care who it is. Let's just make a change. You know, if the country could vote and had the election a month ago and put somebody in office, I think 60-70% of the country would have voted to move on now. Anyway, let's move on to the Democratic side of the things. I'm sorry, the Republican side of things, because I ended up by talking about John McCain, and John McCain has risen. His campaign has been resurrected. So let's talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow is Florida, the primary in Florida, and on the Republican side, it looks like a dead heat as of today. McCain and Romney are tied at roughly 30% each. It's so close, it's hard to say either one has a lead. Giuliani's in at least third place at 18%, something like that, and Huckabee's about 12%. So let's deal with them one at a time. Huckabee probably doesn't have much of a chance at this point. He didn't do as well in South Carolina as he was expected to. There's a large fundamentalist vote there, and he didn't seem to be able to capture it. Also, he doesn't have too many states like that again, so he's not expected to do real well, and he may have to drop out here after a while. He doesn't have much money. Let's go to Giuliani. Giuliani has not campaigned all out in the first six states, though he did some campaigning in those states. But, you know, he'd campaigned for a few days, and New Hampshire wasn't going his way, so he pulled out. Just kind of a weird way to run a campaign. And I've been worried about Giuliani all along because I don't think he's the right man for the job for any number of reasons, one of which is he's a bit of a tyrant. But also, Giuliani's just in trouble in Florida. He's apparently not that well-liked and hasn't campaigned that effectively. He's in third place in a state that he admitted he had to win. This was the first state he was going to win, and he was leading this by 20 points 3 months ago. And then he was going to use a win in Florida to a springboard of a win in some of the major states. He's the moderate Republican, although he's a hawk on a variety of things. And so the principle was that in these winner-take-all big states that are blue states, like California, New York, New Jersey, that usually go for the Democrat, that Giuliani could win all those delegates to the Republican convention. Now, he may still win some of those states, but it's unclear that he's going to be able to pull this off. And so he may be done before he starts, which is what some pundits have been saying for several months, that no one has ever used this strategy of starting late and making it work. So maybe Giuliani will be the first, was the argument, but it's looking less and less. Because what's happened is, as Huckabee wins Iowa, as McCain wins New Hampshire, you get press from that. You get positive press. You get momentum, Big Mo, as Bush's father used to call it, back before he got slow-mo. But Giuliani's sitting back waiting, and he's been out of the news. He got 4% of the vote in New Hampshire, I think it was. 3% or 2% in South Carolina. I mean, he's a non-factor, and now he's going to come storming forward? Doesn't seem likely. So we're down to McCain and Romney. And the Republicans have to decide, do you want a flip-flopper, or do you want a maverick that drives you crazy, who a lot of core Republicans say is not a real Republican? I'm always amazed by that. You know, McCain has an 85%, well, he had an 85% in 1999. He's got an 83% ranking, conservative rating from the American Conservative Union, is it called? American, whoever rates that stuff. And yet, I have so many friends who are 20%ers on the right who say, McCain's not a conservative. He's not even a real Republican. And they base it on McCain-Feingold, which they see as an anti-Republican bill, that is campaign finance reform. You give up something in the First Amendment, but the principle is, how do you get money out of politics? Well, you can't ever get it all out, but it was not a bad attempt at it. But they're irate about this still. And all I can think is they were thinking that it's a partisan thing. At the time, Republicans gathered more money together than Democrats. And, of course, Democrats had more registered voters. So that was the best way for Republicans to compete was with money. But now the Democrats outraised the Republicans the last couple of elections, and it's definitely looking like that this year. So I would think that he'd like to see those limits. I mean, Republicans would like to see those limits. The other one is immigration. I can't argue with him there, to the extent that the rabid right is saying, send all 12 million of them back, build a fence, and then we'll talk about it. Although it's totally impractical, that's their position. McCain has got a more reasonable position, and so he's on the outs with them. But I'm sorry, but we're not sending 12 million people back. We talked about this before. Did you know that the U.S. Immigration Service has corralled up about 27,000 illegals in 2007. And these are mostly people that broke the law. They don't just go raiding them. Well, they've raided a few, but they don't just go raiding willy-nilly. They could collect hundreds of thousands. But they have to process them. You can't just put them on send them across the border or put them on a flight and drop them off in Mexico. It's not how it works. Mexico has to agree to take them back. They have to process them. It's not that simple. It takes time. We can't even process 27,000 a year. There's 12 million of them in the country. To send 12 million back, if you could send a million a year, it would take 12 years, right? And yet, a million a year, we can't even do 27,000 a year. How are we going to do a million a year? So conservative Republicans are going to have to face facts here. And the facts are, you're going to have to deal with this somehow. But that's what they have against McCain. He's just a maverick, too. You know, he voted against the Bush tax cuts because he didn't think they were fair. He stuck his finger in the eye of Republicans in a couple of different ways. Religious conservatives back in 2000, stuff like that. Now, he's tempered that, and he sucked up to a lot of them. And he's played up to Bush, despite the fact that Bush played him real dirty in 2000 in South Carolina. And yet, he was almost washed up, except what's saving him, and the reason they're going to end up nominating McCain, I think, is, well, besides the fact Romney's a flip-flopper and a phony, although he's got a heck of a head of hair. I don't know. Maybe they should nominate him. He's younger. But they're going to nominate him because they don't have another viable candidate to put forward. Certainly not someone they could call a conservative candidate. So we'll see about all that, but I'm not holding my breath for Republicans to figure this out, but I don't see Romney as presidential timber. I mean, he looks good on paper and he looks good in pictures. But I don't think that's the guy that Republicans want to hitch their wagon to. He's the ultimate flip-flopper. You know, he was basically a moderate to liberal Republican in Massachusetts, and now he's saying he never believed all that. Well, I don't know if they'll go for that or not. They might. I'm thinking not. Anyway, Romney and McCain have been arguing back and forth about a lot of nonsense, and it's going to be interesting to see what they end up deciding to do in the end about this, what Republicans decide to do. But Florida's tomorrow, and while it is true over the weekend we've got Maine making choices on the Republican side, that doesn't really count. The big one is February 5th, Super Tuesday. 24 states, a week from tomorrow, will decide, and roughly half the delegates for both Republicans and Democrats will be awarded. And if there's two main people in the race on the Republican side and two main on the Democratic side, I don't think it's going to be settled. I think we're going to see this race go on a little further. And so the question is, will Republicans hold their nose and vote for McCain? Or are they going to take a chance on somebody like Romney because he says what they want to hear? I don't think they're going to take a chance on Giuliani. And I think Huckabee's done. And then on the Democratic side, are Democrats going to jump behind Barack Obama the way the Kennedys did this week and say, you know, this guy can lead us to victory? Because they run the risk, if they turn down Hillary, of turning away someone who's been vetted, someone who's established, somebody who knows how to fight in the trenches, she and Bill, for a younger guy who will be raked over the coals next summer by Republicans as inexperienced and somebody you can't trust during the war on terror. Now, I personally think I got no problem with Obama. If you can put George Bush in office and reelect him after 9/11, don't tell me that the times are too dangerous to put somebody as, quote, naive or young or inexperienced as Barack Obama. He's got more horse sense, to say nothing of more knowledge, than George W. Bush ever had. We will be back next week with another edition of the Andy Finn Show. By next week, we'll be on the cusp of Super Tuesday. And maybe I'll stay away from the election next week. I got a couple topics we haven't gotten to in a while. Taxes. And I can make it interesting, believe it or not, because Mike Huckabee wants the fair tax. I don't think so. But you can read all about taxes on my website at andyfinn.us. And until next week, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.